It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station broadcasting from up here on Signal Hill, where it is currently 57 degrees. And we're looking for a 20% chance of rain today, mostly cloudy skies, high near 56. Rain tonight, mainly after 1 a.m., the low around 52 overnight. Gusty winds from the east as high as 30. And lots of rain starting tomorrow, too. High near 55 tomorrow. Northeast wind to 40 miles per hour, gusting as high as 50 miles per hour tomorrow. And we're looking to up to an inch of rain tomorrow. Coming up on the Midday Report, the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly votes to dismiss its manager. The state's largest school districts are not doing any kind of mass COVID testing. And look at numbers, Alaska's overwhelmed hospitals. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Janine Herbst. Some areas around the New York City region that were hit hard by what was once Hurricane Ida are now under another flash flood watch this evening. As NPR's Hansi Lo Wang reports, officials in New York and New Jersey are urging residents to prepare for rainfall that could devastate the region again.
Some New York City neighborhoods still recovering from last week's floodwaters may see their drainage systems tested again. The ground in many of these areas is still saturated with water, and that could trigger rapid runoff and more flash flooding, not just in the city, but also in New York's Hudson Valley. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio says residents should watch weather forecasts closely.
We're concerned about folks who are hit that any new water could be a problem, and we're also concerned that we could see more than is projected.
New York's governor says the state is also keeping an eye on how Hurricane Larry, currently moving through the Atlantic, could hurt shorelines later this week. Hansi Lo Wang, NPR News, New York.
The trial of a suspected gunman in the worst peacetime attacks on French soil and 19 others accused of helping him has opened in Paris. NPR's Eleanor Beardsley reports the coordinated terrorist assault on Paris cafes, a concert hall, and a sports arena in November of 2015 left 130 people dead, hundreds more injured.
All of France seems riveted on the nine-month trial, which opened under high security and in a courtroom built especially for the proceedings. With six being tried in absentia, 14 men are in a glass-enclosed box, including the accused sole survivor of the 10-man hit team. François Hollande was French president at the time of the attacks. He told France Inter Radio he hoped the surviving accused gunman, Salah Abdeslam, would speak for the first time. But even if he remains silent, said Hollande, the trial has to take place. In the U.S., there was no organized trial for the 9/11 attacks, he said. In France, we wanted a trial. The victims needed a trial. Hollande says the trial is important to learn what happened that night and why. Eleanor Beardsley, NPR News, Paris.
In Richmond, Virginia. Amid happy cheers from the crowd, crews using a crane hoisted the enormous statue of Confederate General Robert E. Lee off its giant pedestal. The statue towered there for more than 130 years. It was removed today after months of protest and court challenges. Jag Khalil from member station WVTF says the statue became a focal point after the murder of George Floyd.
The history of it is just, you know, undeniable. This is one of the biggest symbols of racism in Virginia and probably the country, I think, that's really kind of blasted into national recognition during the protests last summer.
Workers this morning cut the statue in half so it can be brought to a secure location where it will be stored until its final destination is determined. Wall Street trading lower at this hour. You're listening to NPR News.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
A divided Kodiak Island Borough Assembly recently voted to dismiss its manager, who's held the job for the past 5 years. It came up to a vote last Thursday following an hour-long closed executive session. Here's Assemblymember Jeff Smith from that meeting.
I move that the assembly finds that it no longer desires to employ Michael Powers as the manager of the Kodiak Island Borough and chooses to terminate his employment effective 8 a.m. September 3rd, 2021.
The motion carried 4-3 with Jeff Smith, Dennis Simmons, Amy Williams, and Scott Arndt in favor. None of the three against the firing spoke up at the meeting. Kodiak Borough Mayor Bill Roberts told KMXT on Tuesday that the reasons were discussed behind closed doors and wouldn't elaborate.
We basically have the right to fire without cause, and that's what we did.
According to the mayor, the decision had been a matter of eventuality.
Something that's been coming for a while, you know, as Michael Powers would tell you himself, managers live with one suitcase always packed. They're always getting ready to move to their next job. They have a shelf life. So I think that's where we're at right now.
Roberts said that in the short term, the borough is looking for an interim manager. The hiring process for a new manager is something he expects to take several months. But Dave Conrad, the borough's director of engineering and facilities, would be acting manager until then. Reached for comment, former borough manager Michael Powers says the outcome wasn't a surprise.
So I would say the handwriting was on the wall when the assembly changed the evaluation forms that they had used previously to evaluate me and made it much more touchy-feely and much less technical ability. And I think, like many jurisdictions, they wanted to have their own borough manager, so to speak, someone they pick and someone they have chosen.
Powers said that only one member of the borough assembly that hired him in 2016 was still on the assembly, Dennis Simmons, who voted in favor of his firing. Powers also said that he would look for work in the private sector and was also considering finding a similar position in local government. As a correction, an earlier version of this story implied the former manager was fired during the borough assembly meeting last Thursday. The fire, in fact, went into effect 8 a.m. Friday morning. The CDC recommends mass COVID testing at schools in places where transmission levels are high. That label that right now applies to the entire state of Alaska. Only some school districts, however, are doing any kind of surveillance testing, and almost all of the state's largest school districts are not. Nat Herz with Alaska Public Media has more.
Every Wednesday is testing day at the elementary school in the Yukon River village of St. Mary's. And Superintendent Dee Dee Ivanoff shows up to meet staff and students who need to get swabbed.
We have them lined up in the hallways. We have markers where they are to stand. So we're still practicing social distancing. Even when you get down to the kindergarten age and preschool age, they know exactly what to do.
The whole process takes an hour. The school is using rapid antigen tests. The program has been in place since last year, and so far not a single student has tested positive, Ivanoff says.
Just going down the line and watching each one, it's a really good feeling to know that the measures we're putting in place, it's paying off.
This kind of testing is known as screening, and it's one of the main things the CDC recommends for slowing the spread of COVID in schools. One model, which hasn't been peer-reviewed, shows that weekly testing of half of students could reduce cases by 50% in schools with required masking and low vaccination rates, though the effects were smaller if those variables changed. Dr. Ann Zink, the state's chief medical officer, says the most effective tool to cut down the spread of the virus is vaccination.
The next big difference is masking. But that particularly when you aren't doing those things, testing can make a difference, and testing makes more of a difference when you don't have kids who are vaccinated.
The state has offered to support districts that want to do screening testing, and some have launched programs. Juneau is requiring weekly testing for athletes and offering it to staff. And in back-to-school meetings, Kodiak teachers asked if parents, particularly of unvaccinated children, wanted to sign them up for weekly screening. But in four of Alaska's largest school districts on the road system, there's no mass screening testing happening at all, even though most don't require masking. Tom Roth, the chief operating officer in Anchorage, where masks are required, says there's no way the district's 100 nurses could manage weekly testing for 50,000 students and staff.
So, I mean, do the math. You got every nurse doing some 490 surveillance test of everybody in the district a week.
But large districts outside the state have made it work. In Utah, schools are required to conduct mass testing to avoid moving to online learning when COVID cases rise above a certain threshold. And in Maine, many schools are doing pooled testing where multiple samples are combined into one test with individual follow-ups in the event of positives. Roth, the Anchorage operating officer, says that if Anchorage were to institute a mass testing program, it would need to be led by an outside agency, like the city or state health departments.
We think it's important, not for lack of interest or desire or seeing the efficacy of doing it. It's a capacity matter.
State officials, however, say that the district was eligible for a $5.5 million grant that could have gone toward a screening testing program. But Anchorage officials declined to even apply. In a prepared statement, district officials said that was because the grant would have placed unrealistic expectations on its administrators and staff. With help from Maiwa Aina in Anchorage, I'm Nat Herz.
The Kodiak Emergency Operations Center has received new COVID-19 case information from the Kodiak Island Borough. 29 new cases have been reported for the Kodiak Island Borough, with a number of testing dates spread through the 29th through the 7th. Of them, 6 are still unknown, 9 are considered community spread, 1 is travel-related, and 13 are close contacts. 68 cases are currently classified as active locally here in Kodiak. There are no active cases currently hospitalized. Alaska's already overwhelmed hospitals took on another 20 COVID-19 patients over the long Labor Day weekend, leaving nearly 200 people hospitalized with coronavirus. The state reported 186 COVID-19-related hospitalizations yesterday, up from 165 the last time numbers were reported. It also reports more than 2,100 new cases of the virus over the same four-day period and 2 new deaths. More than 20% of the patients in Alaska hospitals have the virus, according to state data. The increases hit the Mat-Su Hospital especially hard, nearly doubling hospitalizations over the past few days. Officials there say the hospital is at capacity and is no longer accepting patients from other institutions. That's a problem because the Mat-Su Hospital had been taking patients from rural areas when space was unavailable at packed Anchorage hospitals. Alaska's hospital advocacy group is continuing to call on residents to get the COVID-19 vaccines and to take other precautions like wearing masks. It has also asked Republican Governor Mike Dunleavy to issue a disaster declaration. A spokesman for Dunleavy says the governor does not plan to issue such a declaration. Instead, he's calling on the Alaska legislature to pass 2 bills he's proposed to aid health care providers. One is aimed at allowing nurses to be licensed in Alaska more quickly. The other would allow more health care services to be provided over the internet. A black bear was shot out of an apple tree at the Haines Sheldon Museum and killed last Tuesday morning after Haines police say the efforts to bring the bear down peacefully failed. As KHNS's Corinne Smith reports, the bear had been visiting the museum where staff had been working to get an electric fence installed before the bear was killed.
A Haines Police Nixle alert went out just before 9 a.m. Tuesday. A large black bear was in an apple tree in front of the Sheldon Museum and warned the public to avoid the area. Wendell Heron, branch manager of First National Bank Alaska, watched the incident with several colleagues from the bank on Main Street. He gave this account on Friday.
We were all huddled in my office watching it going down, brought out the binoculars, tried to spot the bear.
His office has large windows facing the museum and apple tree, which is about half a block away across a parking lot. A small crowd had also gathered on the street nearby to watch. Heron says Haines Police Chief Heath Scott was there already, and Alaska State Trooper Colin Nemec arrived shortly after.
Heath was over there, then Colin showed up, the trooper, and he was... It looked like throwing rocks at it in the tree. That's how we spotted it.
Heron estimates they threw rocks for about 10 or 15 minutes, but the bear didn't move. Then they took out what appeared to be a shotgun.
It took some kind of a smoke round they shot or something to get it out of the tree. And when we saw it eventually come out of the bottom of the tree, it was dragging its hind legs. So then we, you know, heard several more shots and watched him have to put it down out there.
Haines Police Chief Heath Scott said he wasn't available to speak until Tuesday. He released a short statement saying it was unfortunate, but gave no further details on the circumstances of the bear's death. Alaska Department of Fish and Game biologist Carl Koch says the mature black bear had been grazing from the 100-year-old Haines Sheldon Museum apple tree for a while, and museum staff had sought his guidance recently about what to do.
And I advised him to get an electric fence, which he could get from your local hardware store or borrow from Fish and Game. And a fence was borrowed on Monday. And then the rumor I heard was that it was put down outside and maybe stolen and never got set up. And then the next day the bear was in the tree.
Haines Police verified that museum staff borrowed a fence from the local Fish and Game office, but it was stolen, authorities said. A public records request filed by KH&S for police reports were pending as of Friday afternoon. Haines has been struggling with nuisance bears in the community. Last year, at least 11 were reportedly killed in defense of life and property in town and 16 outside the town site. One of those was the police chief outside his home last October, the circumstances of which remain under investigation by Alaska wildlife troopers. Alaska State Trooper Colin Nemec and the Haines Sheldon Museum did not return calls on Friday afternoon. Wildlife biologist Carl Koch explains hazing involves non-lethal means to scare a bear away.
There are numerous things you can do to haze bears, and some are beanbag rounds. They're designed to cause discomfort, but be able to, for lack of a better way to say it, reach out and touch an animal without using a lethal round.
Koch said that every situation is different, especially in a public setting, and declined to comment about the methods law enforcement used in this incident. He said prevention is the best approach and recommended a new community fruit gleaning program called Apples to Bears by the Tokchinook Watershed Council.
They will actually come and pick your fruit off the tree for you if you want them to. They'll even help you arrange to put up an electric fence if you need one.
An electric fence was installed after the incident around the museum apple tree. The police chief said via email there would be no citation or penalty against the museum since a new electric fence had been erected. The bear killed at the museum was an adult male black bear. The hide and skull were turned in to the local Alaska Fish and Game office, and the meat was donated, according to the police chief. In Haines, I'm Corinne Smith.
Anchorage Mayor Dave Bronson is doubling down on his opposition to mask mandates and business closures as tools to fight the rising COVID-19 cases that are threatening hospital ICU capacity in Anchorage. On Tuesday, Alaska reported a record number of COVID-19 hospitalizations, with 1 in 5 hospital beds now filled with COVID patients. Speaking with Alaska Public Media on Tuesday, Bronson said that even if there were lines of patients in need of emergency care at the doors of hospitals, he won't institute restrictions.
I know what a lot of people say, and it's like their last ditch. Well, we have to do something. And we even hear this from national leaders. We have to do something. There's no study that says masking really works because they're not being worn correctly.
Numerous studies, including in Alaska, have shown that mask mandates and business closures have slowed the spread of COVID-19. Bronson says he believes in data but doesn't buy into that consensus.
I get this from doctors, so I'm not sitting here living in a vacuum. I'm talking to doctors all the time. Some of them who are afraid to come out and speak against the public, maybe political issue or perspective of mass, but they said this is ridiculous.
Bronson also says he won't get vaccinated, despite recommendations from health officials, including his chief medical officer. He says he's relying on natural immunity from a previous infection. There's conflicting evidence about the relative effectiveness of vaccines versus natural immunity, but the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommends that everyone eligible get vaccinated. The health department is advertising free vaccine clinics around the city. On Thursday, it will provide at-home vaccines by request for residents who live in east of the Seward Highway.
Today's KMXT local news is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. The governor finally makes his pick for the Board of Fisheries. More after this.
The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute works to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. Learn more at alaskaseafood.org.
It took Freedom of Information requests, weeks of queries to state offices, and more than 3 months past a legal deadline for Governor Dunleavy to finally release his choice for a Board of Fisheries seat. Dunleavy announced last Friday Indy Walton of Soldotna will fill the vacant seat on the 7-member board that directs management of state water, subsistence, personal use, sport, and commercial fisheries. The vacancy came after the Alaska Legislature in May rejected his choice of Abe Williams, a regional affairs director for the Pebble Mine. The governor said in a statement, Walton has fished commercially for 37 years at both Kodiak and Bristol Bay. Two Bristol Bay boats, Sniper and Turbo, are registered in his name. He also is a partner at Last Cast Lodge in Igiagic. Court records show that Walton was charged with 2 closed waters fishing violations in 2005 and 2012, reported KSTK in Wrangell. United Fishermen of Alaska Director Francis Leach said that Walton is a strong anti-Pebble Mine voice and is spoken of highly by his fellow Bristol Bay fishermen. But Representative Bryce Edgman of Dillingham expects Walton's appointment to be controversial when he's up for legislative confirmation next year due to his support for the law that limits Bristol Bay to 32-foot vessels.
If that's the case, he's going to encounter a lot of resistance from year-round residents in the Bristol Bay region because, you know, we've fought long and hard to keep 32-foot limit in place because otherwise local fishermen, particularly our village fishermen, would be disenfranchised and wouldn't be able to compete.
Walton's first fish board meeting will be at its October work session in Anchorage as it prepares to address fishery issues at Prince William Sound and Southeast Alaska. See the list of the other 14 fish board candidates at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Announcement Number 48, issued 10 a.m. September 6th. The following areas will open to commercial salmon fishing for 78 hours from noon Wednesday, September 8th, until 6 p.m. Saturday, September 11th. The Outer Aikuluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Humpy Deadman section of the Alitak District, the East Side Kodiak District, the Northeast Kodiak District, the Southeast of Fognak, Raspberry Strait, Southwest of Fognak, Northwest of Fognak, Shuyak Island, Paul's Bay, Paranosa Bay, Northeast of Fognak, and Duck Bay sections of the Fognak District, the Mainland District, and the Anton Larson Bay, Sheratine Bay, Kajuyak Bay, Terror Bay, Inner Uganic Bay, Spiridon Bay, Zacher Bay, Uyak Bay sections of the Northwest Kodiak District. As previously announced, the following areas remain open to commercial salmon fishing until further notice: Sturgeon, Halibut Bay, and Outer Karlik sections of the Southwest Kodiak District, Central and North Cape sections of the Northwest Kodiak District, Cape Alitak, Alitak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alitak District, and the Iziut Bay and Outer Katoy Bay sections of the Afognak District. Until further notice, in that portion of Northwest Kodiak and Southwest Kodiak districts south of the latitude of Cape Kuliak, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Other closed waters are as shown in the Kodiak area salmon stat charts and detailed in the commercial salmon fishing regulations. Stat charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. Recent salmon fishery announcement information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour cordophone at 486-4559.
Kodiak Island Borough Assembly member Julie Cavanaugh has resigned, leaving a vacant 1-year seat. Interested in serving your island home but can't commit to a 3-year term? This is your chance to be a voice for your friends and neighbors. Applications are available online at www.kodiakak.us or in the borough clerk's office. Fill one out and submit your application by 4:30 p.m. September 20th to be considered for appointment to this seat. We need your vision and your leadership. Submit an application today. And here's your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the 8th day of September, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 7:26. It will set again at 8:46. That will give us 13 hours and 21 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 54 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 67, set in 85, 87, and 2010. And our record low was 35, set just back in 2012. Looking at our local tides, we have an incoming tide. Our next high tide will be at 3:49 p.m. on the east side and be an 8.9-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 9:47 this evening of 0 feet. Over on the west side, you have a high tide coming up at 4:17 this afternoon in Larson Bay. That will be a 15.2-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 10:27 p.m. of minus 0.4 feet. Well, it's 54 degrees out at the airport, 58 right outside the station. And we're looking for just a 20% chance of rain this afternoon, mostly cloudy skies. Rain after 1 a.m. tonight, low around 52, east wind to 25, gusting as high as 30, and heavy rain tomorrow, high near 55 tomorrow, northeast wind to 40 miles per hour, gusting as high as 50. Chance of precipitation is 100%, and they're talking about perhaps 1 inch of rain tomorrow. Looking at our marine forecast, in the Shelikof Strait, we have gale warnings for tonight and Thursday. South wind to 15 knots right now. Seas to 4 feet. For tonight, east wind to 25 knots. Will turn to the northeast to 35 knots after midnight, and seas will build to 14 feet after midnight tonight in the Shelikof. For tomorrow, northeast 40, seas to 16 feet. From Marmot Island to Sitkanak, Kodiak's east side offshore, gale warning tonight and Thursday, southeast 20, seas to 4 feet this afternoon, coming up to southeast 30 tonight, turning to the east and going to 40 knots after midnight, seas building to 12 feet after midnight on our east side tonight, and for tomorrow, east winds to 40 knots, seas to 16 feet. The city and borough clerks are seeking registered voters to serve as election workers for future elections. Election workers span the generation gap from high school students to senior citizens and mirror the amazing diversity of our community. Here are 5 reasons to be a poll worker. 1, you'll work side by side with your neighbors and meet new people. You'll play a vital role in the democratic process. Your community needs you. Kodiak must recruit several poll workers every year for elections to run smoothly. And it's a great opportunity to meet people, serve your community, and have fun doing it. And the number one reason, they pay you. You can be paid to do a good thing. Contact the city clerk at 486-8636 or the borough clerk at 486-9310 to learn more. The Kodiak City Council will be holding a regular council meeting tomorrow. That meeting will begin at 7:30 p.m. Elected officials may be participating via audio-video conferencing. Public members are encouraged to tune in here at KMXT on 100.1 FM at 7:30 tomorrow. And the meeting will be web-streamed, and the web-streaming link and meeting packets are available at the City of Kodiak website. If you have more information that you need to have, contact the City Clerk's Office at 486-8636. The Kodiak Fisheries Development Association is holding its annual meeting tomorrow. The meeting begins at 9 a.m. in the Kodiak Island Borough Building Assembly Chambers. The meeting is open to the public. For additional information, contact Linda Freed, the Secretary Treasurer, at freed@gci.net. That's freed@gci.net.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.